entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
And it is another beautiful Thursday night in Sherman Oaks, California. This is LA Talk Radio, and you are listening to The Writer's Block. My name is Jim Christina. I am your host for the show, and in studio tonight with the lovely, charming, delightful Bobby Jean Bell and her husband, Jim. And you had a wonderful show today on Campfire Cafe.
Oh, we did. We had a wonderful new singer-songwriter out of Colorado by the name of Caitlin Tosig. And she has a brand new CD that was released last year. And we were her first radio interview. Gary Holt, host of Campfire Cafe out of Nashville, and myself, we had a lovely time, wonderful time. Mm-hmm. So here we are now at talking. We're going to be talking to Vermont.
We're just all over the country.
Nashville,
Vermont. We're in California. Holy crapperini! Next week you have your concert series. Who's on?
We do. We have Eli Barcy coming in from Canada, along with her husband John Cunningham. Eli returns. Let's see. This is a third time, I think, performing as part of our concert series, and she's wonderful. She just does it all, from bluegrass to gospel to western, original singer-songwriter, award-winning vocalist and songwriter, and we're just excited to have her. Tickets are still available. That is for next Thursday night. The SCV-TV presents the Out West Concert Series, and you can call us at 661-347-9700 to reserve your seats.
Wow. You got that down by...
Well, you open that door, I'm going to go right in there.
Well, The Writer's Block is brought to you by Black Dog Publishing in Simi Valley. It's by Out West Boutique and Cultural Center in Newhall, the home of the Out West Concert Series. What's that number again, Bobby?
661-347-9700.
Go ahead and suck it up while you can. And by Target Freight Management in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And you know, we talk about Target Freight every week, and we do because they're really, really, really good folks, and they have the best full truckload service in the industry. Have we mentioned, though, that TFM Truckload is not only the finest in the industry, but gets your freight there every time, on time, at the rates you need for your transportation costs? Call today. Call 844-653-7789. Get a pencil. 844-653-7789. And tell them you heard it on The Writer's Block, and they'll have something a little extra for you. And while we're at it, if you are an LTL shipper, you are probably looking for the best rates with the least hassle in the industry. Well, call Target Freight Management. Their customized transportation management system is just a ticket to getting your freight moved your way. Call Target Freight Management today. Another pencil time, 888-653-1323, or go to www.targetfmi.com on the web. Call today. You will not be sorry. And I just talked to Mike again yesterday.
Is he coming?
He is, but I don't know when. It's going to be after. Oh, I have to tell you. The next week, I will not be here next Thursday because I am having hip replacement surgery on Monday. So.
And you'll be a new bionic man
afterwards. I'll be the bionic man. That pretty much fixes all the parts, so I'll be like new.
Yeah.
I get another 100 years to break everything again.
There
so.
You go.
I won't be here next week, and I really wanted to be because our guest, we'll let you know who it is at the end of the night, but oh my gosh, a great guy.
It'll be a great show, and it'll be a podcast.
It'll be on a podcast. What's his name? The dog trainer, Russ Avison. our co-host and Mr. Courtney Joyner will be doing the interviewing on next Thursday night. So you really want to mark that on your calendar and make sure that you listen in because it's going to be a great show. And I might even get up out of bed and call in. Well, who knows? Who knows? Okay, our guest tonight is, well, his name is Lawrence A. Booker. But talking to him today, he prefers to be called Larry.
Larry.
Mm-hmm. He's a native of New York City and is completely of Irish heritage. So watch it. His roots in Vermont go way back to the 1850s when his great-grandparents got off the boat from Ireland. They did, and settled in a farm in Danbury, or Danby, Vermont.
Danby.
Yes, and that's Danby is where his grandmother, his father, and his aunt were born. He spent 4 years in the U.S. Navy. I went to meteorology school, where he learned about weather observations. And there's a good thing, because this book that we're going to be talking about today is just about weather observation, tides, currents.
And more.
And more, and blah, and people dying. And
World War II.
He's got a master's from Castleton State College. He taught high school level business. His first book, it's called McGrath's Detail, was a story of that small meteorological detail taking weather observations just prior to D-Day. And it was published online. I'm going to ask him about that, too, because I don't know how he did that. And many of his friends and neighbors in Vermont wanted him to write another book. So he did. And here it is. It's called McGrath's Murder. We'll also be touching on that tonight briefly. And it's the same hero, William McGrath. He gets caught up in a murder there in Ireland. And let's bring him in right now. There's so many questions I need to ask him. So let's bring in Mr. Larry Booker. Larry,
hello,
are you with
Jim.
Us?
Hello,
Bobby.
Larry. How are you?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Oh, I'm feeling very well here.
Are you? You're feeling like you're on a talk a wee bit.
I feel like I'm on an Irish talk show. It is lovely. It is lovely.
And did you have one of these wonderful meals by Mrs. O'Shaughnessy?
Oh, yes, Mrs. O'Shaughnessy. She was the housekeeper for William McGrath.
Right.
Let me tell your audience about William McGrath so we know who we're talking
about.
Please,
let's do.
Now, William McGrath is a lieutenant in the U.S. Navy, and he did weather observations over in Hawaii. But he was told by headquarters to go to Ireland, and he would have a small naval detachment. This is 1943. And he would be sending the weather observations of the North Atlantic and the North Sea and the Irish coast down to Eisenhower, so Eisenhower could plan his D-Day invasion. So there are seven men and William McGrath, and William McGrath is the grandson of the person who founded McGrath's shipping lines, and they would ship whatever you wanted all over the world. He's very wealthy. He's a Bostonian. He's blue-blooded. And so he joined the Navy to be patriotic, and he ends up in Ireland, and all manner of things happen to the poor guy. Indeed, falling in love with an Irish woman.
What can
I tell you?
That would be Lady Cynthia Fitzhugh.
Yes, and that doesn't happen until near the end of the,
book.
There's some other men in the detail that have things that go on before William.
It's a story that kind of, every chapter is different.
I got some.
Oh, yes,
hungry.
Absolutely. There's a mix in there. There are IRA sympathizers.
Oh, yeah, and
there's
spies.
Turncoat. There are spies. And, of course, the seven American sailors, the U.S. sailors, are taking weather observations and sending them down there. And they're not really prepared for spies and IRA sympathizers. And there's a couple of fights and all of this stuff that goes on. And I tried to mix it up as much as I could in McGrath's detail. But that's the first book of the trilogy. I've just finished the third book, and that's my publisher right now.
So you're going to be McGrathing it all over the place.
Yeah, three books. First of all was McGrath's Detail. Right. I can talk more about that. And I'll tell you where I got the inspiration for that.
I was just going to ask.
Yes.
You're on top.
Let me just tell you the three books. First of all is McGrath's Detail.
Okay.
Then there's McGrath's Murder.
Correct.
And I've just finished, and I placed with my publisher, and we've gone to contract. So that's going to be available in late October. It's called McGrath in Paris, and that will be the end of the trilogy.
Mm.
But the first book, McGrath's Detail, as I said, takes place in Ireland in a small town in the West Country right near Galway Bay. And when I went to weather school, as you mentioned a few minutes ago, I was in Lakehurst, New Jersey, the U.S. Navy sent me over to England to take weather observations with other sailors, of course. And I was there for 26 months doing that. But I was on an old RAF base. It was about 100 American sailors. But it was an RAF base that had taken part in the Battle of Britain. And as I went along, my fertile imagination over these 26 months said, well, gee, it sounds like this would be a good story to place during the Second World War. And so I developed characters, and this was in 1962. And I never got around to writing the story until a few years ago, because I got out of the Navy, I went to college, marriage, career, kids, and all of that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So it was staved off for a few years. But the inspiration for McGrath's Detail came about from my being stationed on this RAF base in England. It was called West Malling in Kent County.
Now, Larry, I have a question for you, because I found this so very, very interesting. You make a comment, I think, early in the book that this meteorology is kind of a new science at that time for,
I'm just gonna ask the same question.
For the military. And my dad was in World War II, and he was a meteorologist.
Oh, boy.
And he never really spoke about it very much. And he was stationed in Hawaii for several months. And I don't remember where he went to school, actually, the meteorology school. And unfortunately, we lost my dad a year ago at 92 or 93. And oh, my goodness, how I'm wishing now that I would, you know, be able to chat with him more about his meteorology experience.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
That was so interesting that that was a kind of a new... Tell us a little bit more about the about that, how that all came about in the history of meteorology.
Okay, meteorology is obviously the weather, a science of studying the weather and, and trying to forecast the weather. And it's comparatively new if you consider it next to the pure sciences of biology, chemistry, and physics. But probably around the 1900s, early 1900s, there was a lot of work done in Norway on air mass movement, and they did a lot of work and made some discoveries about it, and then it just spread, and people began, I don't know exactly when, but people began majoring in meteorology or becoming meteorologists in college sometime after, maybe the 1920s or so, I'm just guessing on that. But when McGrath became a meteorologist, of course, he's pretty high tone, so he went to MIT. I placed him there at MIT, studied, he would have had to study a lot of physics, a lot of chemistry, and then tie that into pure meteorology so mm-hmm. that he could make forecasts.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, of course, everything is done forecasting from satellite.
Sure.
And during the war, we didn't have any satellites.
Yeah, everybody had to sit there at the side of a cliff and watch the wind blow.
Well, it was very
exactly.
interesting that some of the, a little bit of the experiments and things that you do touch on. The book for our readers is not heavy into meteorology. It's just it's partly what brings these men together and puts them in this, you know, in this situation.
Right.
That's absolutely correct, Bobby. They're just meteorology is like the glue that holds these guys together, and they're either weather observers, and they take the weather observing that they do and they give it to Lieutenant McGrath, and he projects out what he thinks the forecast is going to be. And two of the sailors are radio men, so they transmit the weather forecast and the meteorology, the weather observations down to Eisenhower, so Eisenhower can understand what's going on in the North Sea and in the North Atlantic.
And it's all in
so,
code.
So, yes, you're very right. The weather observing is just the glue that holds these guys together.
Yeah.
And then eventually a couple of love affairs develop and a few fights and so on and so forth. And
a murder.
Just a wee bit of whiskey.
Oh. You gotta, when you're in Ireland, you got to have a couple of good fights. But, you know, since I'm FBI, you know what FBI is.
Full-blooded Irish.
That's full-blooded Irish.
That's
you're right.
Right.
Good man.
Well, you know, just substitute Irish for Italian.
There you go, full-blooded Italian.
Only
that's,
we say
good to me.
We just say FBI.
Yeah. Now there's a lot of dialogue in this book, and it's kind of fun to try to read aloud. I don't do accents very well, but tell us a little bit about your process for writing dialogue.
Well, the reason for writing dialogue is to try to get into the atmosphere of the environment. Now, this is this town where they live is called Kildunley, mm-hmm. and that came out of, as I said, my fertile imagination. But I, having lived in an Irish neighborhood in New York, and having been to Ireland a couple of times, you pick up on the Irish accent, and I wanted to get that Irish accent and how Irish people speak in the English language. Like T-O becomes T-E-R. So T-O-Y-O-U is Terrier, meaning to you, but it's Terrier kind of thing. Not to denigrate the Irish, but it's just the way you hear a lot. And I lived in an Irish neighborhood, and there were Irish, pure Irish, and Irish descendants there, but you could still hear in the newcomers how they spoke back in the old country, you know, and they said, oh, Jesus, this kind of thing. And
Sweet
the kids
Jesus.
Would imitate them.
Now, isn't there, they still speak a lot of Gaelic in their language as well, don't they?
Well, they do. They do. But you find that mostly in the West, around Galway, but definitely in the Aran Islands. That's a series of islands off the coast of, west coast of Ireland, mm-hmm. off the coast of Galway. Mm-hmm. That's where they a lot of pure Gaelic is spoken.
Yeah.
The rest of the Ireland is mostly, I suppose, in some areas they speak Gaelic, and street signs or road signs are in English and Gaelic. And but English seems to be the predominant language because of there was a lot of technology over there. There are links with England, but then more recently Irish links with the United States.
Sure.
So English is predominant. Yeah,
sure. They butcher it, so it couldn't be called the English Irish language.
I'd say Anglo Irish.
Well,
with every country, it's butchered a little bit.
Yeah, sure. It's always butchered a little bit.
You touch a lot on history. You give us little bits of, you mentioned, you know, the Vikings and the Normans and the Saxons. And, you know, I thought back, Jim, to the author, you know, to Robert Hirsch that we had not long ago.
Yes.
And that was writing about those exact time period.
Right.
And so that's always kind of fun when we can link up some of what else we've been reading. It's
exactly.
Like having a liberal arts education.
Right.
And the reason I did that, there's two reasons. First of all, I found on my grandmother's side, they came from Cork City, which is on the east coast of Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
And in reading Irish history, I found out that the Vikings settled on the east coast of Ireland, and there was a lot of once they finished, you know, chopping everybody up and conquering and so on, they started intermarrying and everything. And this was probably around the year 1000. So I'm saying to myself, from the way I look, pale, very, very light, and fair hair, I said, gee, maybe I got a little Scandinavian blood in me, too, so I'm Anglo-Viking or Irish Viking or something
that. I mean, well, look at Eric the Red. His hair was flaming red. I mean,
I know,
Scandinavians weren't known for red hair, so that had to have been a mix somewhere.
And mine was when I was young. When I was a young pup, mine was very red, too.
With freckles?
But if you look on the cover of McGrath's Detail, you'll see that there's a little tower on top of those cliffs,
mm-hmm.
and that's called O'Brien's Tower. And the story had been told to me when one of the times when we were over in Ireland that tower was built for people to watch out in the distance for the Viking sails to come.
Mm-hmm.
And when they saw the Viking sails, whoever was on watch would run down and tell the people in all the towns around, the Vikings are coming, you know, hide your goods, hide your daughters, hide all your money and all of this kind of stuff. And so that gave me the idea, well, if they have a tower there looking for Vikings, and it probably was used for other things, how about the idea of a tunnel that goes from O'Brien's Tower down to the cliffs and a dock on the sea so that the Irish could go into the tunnel and hide.
Right.
And that gave me the idea for just McGrath's escape in the end, you know.
Yeah. So that's your imagination. That doesn't exist there.
Not to my knowledge.
I
haven't found it.
None
of the archaeologists have told me about it. But no, that's right out of my fertile imagination.
We know where you can get a shovel.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Next time I go over, I'm going to bring a big shovel. I'll dig for an hour.
Dig, yeah, there you go. Dig the tunnel. What the hell?
That's right. Why not? I mean, somebody's got to do it.
Now, when you said that you started kind of creating this book in 62 and then a lot of different things happened in your life, were you writing all along, though? Were you, you know, in spare moments, or were you doing short stories, or did you just not write from 1962 until the time you pulled this back out again?
I wrote during the eighth grade and early high school and middle high school. I wrote short stories for my own pleasure. Then when I got this idea in 1962, it just kind of churned around in my brain for many years, and I didn't really do much writing until about the year 2000 or so. It's quite a span of time, but well, I had going to NYU and got married, got a job, kids, and all this kind of stuff. And then we moved from New York up here to Vermont. There just wasn't time. So I finally, the kids went out, were empty nest, and I just settled down and started writing McGrath's Detail. And McGrath's Detail came out, and it's a cliffhanger at the end. You know, you don't know what's going to happen because McGrath's on the phone.
Right.
And so people around here, townspeople in this town and some of my relatives are saying, what's going to happen? Well, you got to write another one.
Yeah, so my fans don't say that.
Yep, they do. They do. Right. So that generated McGrath's Detail. Yep, and so, but really to answer your question, Bobby, you're quite right. Between 1962 and a time of about 2000, I didn't do very much writing at all.
Well, you certainly get busy, and I get that.
Yeah, yeah. Who do you like to read?
This could be young adult. I don't do profanity. I don't do porn. You haven't seen any of that in those books.
No.
Right. No, I just don't do that. So young adults would read it. Any adults, anybody of Irish heritage, anybody who's gotten off the boat from Dublin, or anyone interested in a good mystery, I think McGrath's Detail is more of an adventure. McGrath's Murder is more of a mystery.
That's a whodunit.
That's a whodunit, yes. Yeah. It is.
And in your spare time, are there some authors that you really enjoy reading yourself? Who do you reach for to read?
Well, I enjoy Hemingway, he's had an effect on me. Hemingway used to write early in the morning, like Fitzgerald wrote early in the morning, and I go back and I read their stuff, you know, For Whom the Bell Tolls and No Man is an Island, but I find myself writing at night, late at night, after supper, and we're kind of settling down for the evening. I come down here maybe 8:30 downstairs to the study. And I start doing some writing then, and the day is done, all the work's done, and thoughts flow. Mm-hmm. Thoughts just flow.
Yeah,
but I do enjoy Hemingway.
Yeah, about that time, my thoughts are flowing right into my bedroom.
I'm a night owl, so I do a lot of whatever I'm working on.
I'm up at 3, and
I'm going to bed when you're getting up.
Yeah, I know. And we exchange emails at 3 something in the morning.
He'll say, "Are you up?
Are you up?" And she goes, "No, I'm going to bed." I said, "Well, I just got up."
Oh my gosh!
Yeah.
I come down here and there's you got to get inspiration in order to write. Mm-hmm. And excuse me. For the last book, McGrath in Paris, there's a combination of people there. We've got McGrath and Cynthia. They're married by this time, and they're Irish, and we have other Irish, and then we have a lot of Frenchmen. I have a couple of Greeks and a couple of Spaniards. And the way I developed this book is that I envision the beginning, and I envision the end. And it's just that I constantly seek inspiration to fill in with events and situations going on from the beginning to the end. It's like taking two pieces of bread, and you put butter on the inside of these two pieces of bread, and then you start putting on bologna, ham, salami, and cheese, and then finally you've got a novel. But that's the way my mind
works.
Yeah.
You
know? And in order to get inspiration, many times I come down here, downstairs to the study, and I get on YouTube, And to get inspiration for this Greek fellow, I'd listen to the music from Zorba the Greek.
Oh, wow.
On various things. Well, you know, Anthony Quinn dancing on the seashore at Crete.
Right.
And for Paris, there are 100 songs out there, you know, Under Paris Skies, La Vie en Rose, and all of these. And they sit there, and I've been to Paris several times, and ideas just flow, you know.
What's the time period in this new one, McGrath in Paris? Is it like in the mid to late 50s?
Oh, no. This is 1947, March to April
1947. Okay. So it's still in the same time period.
It spans about 2 months.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's after the war. There's, you know, it's trying to get reconciliation within the French people. Those who collaborated, of course, paid a very heavy toll from those who were loyal to France. And I bring some of that in. And other things that I do is get onto Google, and I would search for Ernest Hemingway just to see when he arrived in France. And he arrived in France shortly before Liberation Day. He was with the 4th Infantry, and he was embedded as a reporter.
Mm-hmm.
And he went right to the Hotel Ritz, went right into the bar, and declared that he had liberated the Hotel Ritz. So I thought that was pretty neat.
That's Hemingway.
Well, yeah, you mentioned Fitzgerald earlier, and, you know, I was just going to say that he had to write early, because any time after 9:30 or 10 in the morning, he was plastered.
He was. Yeah, he was zonked. I mean, this guy just poured it on down.
Oh, my God. He drank F. Scott Fitzgerald.
Oh, terrible.
Yeah, he was a horrible drunk. Hey, yeah. Look, I need to take a couple of minutes.
In the 1920s, during the days of the Lost Generation with Gertrude Stein and Hemingway and all of this, Hemingway became a friend of Fitzgerald.
Right.
And Fitzgerald introduced Hemingway to the bar at the Ritz Hotel. He did.
He became his very best friend.
And they'd pour a few down there. And Hemingway said, and I found this on Google, that when I die, heaven will be the bar at the Ritz Hotel.
Oh, my gosh.
So just by skimming through Google and getting ideas of what I want to write about, what did the collaborators do?
Mm-hmm.
Who was the president of France in 1947?
Mm-hmm.
And then I put this, a wedding of one of the characters, a Frenchman. His wedding is in the background of the visitation of McGrath and Lady Fitzhugh when they go to Paris. And then what comes out of nowhere? A serial killer. So what's the idea between McGrath and Cynthia, the wedding, and a serial killer? Well, quite obviously, somebody's going to have to buy the book to find out what's going on. I'm giving away too many details.
I was going to say Miss Scarlet in the library with the candlestick.
Really? We'll have to schedule you for next year when that comes out.
Hey, look, Larry, I'm going to stick you on hold for a minute. We're going to take a little tiny break, give everybody a potty time, and we'll be back to you in about 30 seconds, 45 seconds.
So, I'm going to take a good big drink of water.
There you go. Okay. Yeah, that's good.
Talk to you in a minute.
Okay. We're going to be listening here to a little bit of a song by Dave Stamey called Tonopah.
I carry my saddle by the side of the road. Hard rain's falling, wind blowing cold. East across the mountains, here the vital sing, telling me it's time to hurry home. And I would fly there now if I had wings. Go soaring back to Tonopah, headlights glowing. Cars hurry past, just like the years, all flowing so fast. If I can get there, I know.
And we're back. And if you're just now joining us, well, shame on you. You should have been here 35 minutes ago. We're speaking tonight with Larry Booker, writer of a couple books, McGrath's Detail, McGrath's Murder, and his newest one, just at the publisher,
McGrath
in Paris. So,
yeah. Larry. Forms the trilogy.
And you're going to kill him off after the end of the trilogy, right?
He's going to have to come up with a whole new series.
Okay, hey, look. Well, I got to ask
you.
I'll
tell you, a couple of them get killed off in McGrath and Paris, but McGrath and Cynthia, they make it back to Ireland.
Well, I'll tell you what. You read one of my books, everybody dies. I kill off the most popular characters in a series.
Larry, I hate that about what Jim writes. You finally like somebody, and pff, they're gone.
Yep, he gets killed. But my books are about the Old West. They're about Arizona in the 1880s, and people died.
Oh, yeah.
So there you go.
Tough life, I guess.
There you go. Okay, talk to me about online publishing. How do you go? Does one go about that?
Well, online publishing is. I was searching for a publisher a few years ago, and I got the LMP, the Literary Marketplace, and I wrote down the names and addresses and emails of. I'd say 35 or 40 publishers, and I just sent out emails right, left, and center, and I was hoping that one would come back and say, yeah, we want to look at your book. So this one publisher came back, and it's W&B Publishing out of North Carolina, and the publisher said, I'm ex-military and full-blooded Irish, and I'd like to take a look at your two books. So I sent them to him, and he says, we're going to publish them. I've never met the man, never talked to him, but we email back and forth a lot. As opposed to dealing with a brick and mortar house,
like
a random house, you know. I don't know how you get into that thing. You know, you got to be, you know, God himself to be able to get published on that.
We can give you some cues there too. We know a few of them people.
Okay, but my publisher W&B, they do a very good job at book layout, cover design, and production, and all this kind of stuff. But they don't have a PR department. I was just going to ask you guys, how can I develop a little PR for these books?
Well, I tell you, the best way we have found, and we deal with a lot of writers that are independently published, as I talked to you on the phone today, independently published, and they deal with publishers that don't have PR departments in their building because they have really cut back. You know, publishing is really, you're not spending near the money anymore. There no book tours, no nothing anymore. So we have found that the best way to do it is to start out in your local area and find every place that has got a book fair and libraries, get the libraries to bring you in. I've done a couple of libraries here in L.A. County. And they usually will let you in the afternoon, like a Saturday or a Sunday afternoon, and they promote you. And then you just bring your books in, you set up a little card, whatever, and you talk about your book, and you sell them, and you ask questions, and they answer questions. And so that's a really good way.
I've done that a number of times in the area here, my town, a couple of towns around there, and around here, and there are a couple of bookstores, so that's something that I have been doing.
Then you need to start branching
out
further away. But, you know, you're in Vermont. There's not a whole lot of places to go where you are.
No, there aren't. There aren't.
There's a wonderful series of books written by Howard John. What's her first name? Howard Johnson. Shirley. The Frugal Book.
Charlotte. No.
No, Shirley.
No.
Howard Johnson. Oh my gosh, I'm so
Carolyn.
Sorry. Carolyn, thank you. Just having a brain freeze. Carolyn.
She just got back into town.
Carolyn Howard Johnson. She was a guest on our show a couple of months ago. I can send you the link to the podcast because it was fabulous. She has written a series of books specifically to answer exactly your question, and she takes you step by step by step. They all have the frugal in the name of the title of the series. So there's one on the frugal book marketing. There's one on frugal publishing. It's a fabulous series. And Carolyn, if you're listening, I really apologize for kind of screwing this up. But you'll find that. And I was blown away by these books. I read one or two of them all the way through cover to cover and thought, boy, if I was an author, I would be following this blueprint. She gives you everything you need about social media, everything, how to write a query letter. I mean, it's phenomenal.
Yeah, she's really good. And she's very easy to talk to.
Yeah, and she writes a blog where she interviews authors, and she's all about supporting all of you that are doing the written word. So that would be
How do I get in touch with her?
We can email you her email address and her contact information.
Yeah, absolutely.
We have your email address, so we can do that.
Yeah, you do, because I have an email from here. I've got it up on my screen right now. It's from Bobby.
Yeah.
And it's saying to listen to the podcast, and I checked this out with Jim earlier today. It's http://latalkradio.com/content/writersblock.
Right.
And then you
I'm going to send that to everybody I know.
Yeah. Well, you should.
And you can go down to the archives. And then I think I also sent you the link for iTunes, because all of our shows are also up on iTunes.
iTunes and on Google Music.
And Google Music.
Or Google Play. Google Play.
Google Music.
So, if I take, Bobby, I got to get your permission on this. I have your email here. If I take those sites and cut and paste them and send them out to my fans, is that all right with you?
Of course.
Make sure that writer's block is hyphenated. Writer's hyphenated block.
You just want to make sure that you
Because I'm just going to cut and paste it as Bobby sent it to me.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it takes you right to our page.
Absolutely.
Right up to Bobby's smiling face.
Oh, boy. So what I'm going to do then is I'm going to cut and paste that onto emails and onto Facebook and just get the word out to everybody as I have been. But this is really comprehensive, what you sent me.
And I'll tell you what, Carolyn, she's going to be actually joining our show when she's in town. She's she's out of town a lot. She and her husband travel.
They
just got back from Europe, I think.
And she's just remarkable. We're going to have a frugal minute.
A frugal minute with Carolyn. Howard Johnson.
And she'll give a tip every time she's on with us. We're really looking forward. That's why I'm so embarrassed that I fumbled over her name.
And we're really sorry, Carolyn. We still love you. Trust us, we do.
Oh, my gosh.
I'll be in touch. I won't trip over your name.
I just got a Facebook message from Carolyn Tuesday. I'm back in town now.
So we want to know, one of the questions that we ask every single week is, Jim, do you want to ask the question?
I can. The name of the show is The Writer's Block. Larry, have you ever had writer's block?
Not really. I'm just into it over the last few years.
Uh-huh.
Yes, I guess I have here and there, you know, where my writer's block would be where I'm in a situation and I can't find a resolution. And it's not that I can't write, it's just that I can't come up to a resolution. But to say that I have writer's block and have absolutely no idea where I'm going, that's probably not true. Probably has not happened at all
yet.
With me. But what I do is I have a little spiral notebook here, 4 inches by about 7 inches.
Oh, we do too.
And I just keep writing ideas down in that. And then I start splitting those things up into paragraphs and then paragraphs into chapters. And from there, I start word processing. And that's the way my book develops. You know, as I said, I have two pieces of bread. I put butter on each piece of bread. And that's the beginning of the book, and the other one is the end of the book. And then I use my little notebook here to write down ideas and situations, and before I know it, I have a novel developed, and sometimes I get a block where I can't come up with a solution for something, but you just let it sit for a while.
Sure.
Let it sit. Come down, and I come down to the study in my house here, and I fire up YouTube, and I sit and I listen to Greek music, or I listen to French music, and then all of a sudden, I say to myself, that's what I'm going to do. That's how I'm going to resolve this problem.
I'm hurt. No Italians in McGrath in Paris.
No, there aren't any Italians, Jim. I'm sorry about that.
How can
that.
You
mea culpa and all that kind of stuff.
Well, but Jim, we know
you
I got
Irish.
The Greeks in there.
He has to be starting ideas for a whole new series.
Irish are all the same.
You know, so maybe that'll have a lot of Italians in it.
Yeah. Actually, you know, the biggest combination in New York of marriages is Italian and Irish.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, half the people I know are Irish and Italian.
Because they're almost identical.
Irish and Jewish. My wife is Jewish.
Oh, there you go.
All right, I want to get back to process. I have another process question. When you are writing, are you doing it on a computer? Are you still, longhand? Do you have an old favorite Smith Corona typewriter? How are you getting your thoughts down?
Everything is on Word. What I do then, as I said, Bobby, is to get my thoughts and my ideas down on this little notebook paper here. And I've got a notebook loaded with ideas and thoughts and things that I want to work into the novel. And then I get those and I read them, and then I sit down at Word, and that's where I pump out the novel. Edit, constantly editing, write a chapter, go back, reread it, and then go on to the next chapter, add to the chapter, look up something in Google, find out I made a mistake, go back, fix the chapter. But everything I do is on Word, yes.
Okay. And when you read, are you an electronic reader, or do you still like the feel of paper between your fingers?
I like paper between my fingers and a glass of Merlot by my elbow.
Oh, you're the man. Well, I'm going to be sending you a coffee mug. It will hold Merlot.
Yes, it will hold
Merlot. Okay, great.
And Chablis and anything else that you like, I know from experience.
They're very cool coffee mugs. I don't know if you went on the Facebook page and saw them, but they're very cool.
I'll take a look.
There you go.
And I may just pour some Merlot in the coffee mug and sit down and read a little book.
I think you should.
Do you have any advice for somebody that's writing out there now?
Oh, yes. Constantly think. Just constantly think. Sit down, close your eyes, and let your imagination take off. And use music for inspiration. I used to listen to Zorba the Greek and other Greek tunes and lots of Parisian tunes, because the third book has Greeks and Frenchmen in it. But the idea to seek inspiration from music on YouTube. Seek inspiration, sitting down, closing your eyes, and just letting your mind race, letting your mind rest or drift into solutions, drift into resolutions, drift into situations, and it's all a mental thing. Also, something I found, I'm really into exercise. So the more I exercise, the better I feel. Then I sit down, and while the blood is pumping through me, I just sit down and let my mind wander. And I come up with ideas that if I were half asleep, I wouldn't come up with, So the combination of the three things, a little exercise, a little dreaming, and a little inspirational music.
But no show tunes, right? No show tunes. No.
Well,
show tunes?
Show tunes.
Fiddler on the Roof would be. do you belong to any writing groups, or do you have a good buddy that you, go through the process with as you're writing?
Nope, I'm a loner in that aspect. I do belong to one group that also gave me a lot of inspiration. There's about four or five of us here in town. We sit around every other Monday, and we practice our French. And one of the people is a retired French teacher, and she helps us with our French, and so on and so forth. She helped me with some of the French that I use in McGrath in Paris, because there's a lot of French in there. And je peux parler français très bien ici. I can speak French fairly well.
Oui, oui.
And in the Northeast we speak French. In the Southwest it's Spanish, I guess.
All I remember is, où est la bibliothèque? No. And bonjour, je m'appelle Bobby.
Non parlo francese.
Oui, Bobby, je m'appelle Laurent. Yeah.
Non parlo francese.
No, for the most part, I'm a loner. When I'm thinking about a book, thinking about developing a book, getting inspiration, solving problems, resolution, it's me alone. The only other person who helps me is my wife.
Okay,
I bounce ideas off of her.
Mm-hmm. Does she
She's
read,
my primary editor.
Does she read when you have things ready to be read, or do you read it aloud, or do you hand her chapters, or how do you do that?
All of the above.
Okay.
Everything that can do. If I hand her a chapter or half a chapter, I say, why don't you take a look at this and let me know how things look. And I had an idea, and here's the idea, and what do you think about it? Mm-hmm. And here's how it ties in. And then she says, yeah, that's good, but. And dedicate the book to her. She's a great editor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, my wife does all mine, too. But I call her when I write something really cool. And I say, yeah. Are you sitting down? And she goes, what else would I be doing? So I read her the passage. She says, well, that's really good, but I don't know what's in front of it.
I haven't read the chapter yet. Oh, because you haven't put it in context.
Oh, yeah, right.
So she goes, well, that sounds really, really cool, but I hope there's something in front of that that we can, grab onto.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, there is. I don't want to read you the whole chapter. Just the really
cool
part. Just
the really cool part.
There you go.
Hey, well, Larry, thanks for joining us tonight. It's been an absolute hoot.
My pleasure entirely.
You're just one of these, really buoyant guests that, we get from time to time, and it just keeps us moving.
Absolutely.
It's like I want to sit here and dance now because you're talking about Zorba the Greek.
Yeah, I want to read book three.
Yeah.
You got to get on YouTube and go find, what's his name, Anthony Quinn, dancing on the sands of Crete Island.
I actually have a confession.
I must have listened to that thing 50, 60 times.
I watched that not too long ago. That
really?
Is my confession.
Did you really? I did. Jim, we can never surprise you. Larry, we can never surprise Jim no matter what we talk about. He's been there, done that.
No, that's not necessarily true. But it's usually stuff we talk about that I've just finished. So.
Well, and none of us are going to call him on it either.
I could prove everything. Because during lunch, I watch YouTube a lot.
Now we have a confession about what you do during lunch.
And I watch a lot of the old movies. In fact, I watched, what's her name, and Fred Astaire dance today.
Oh, you did? Ginger Rogers or
Keep going, back, 1940.
Who else? Ginger Rogers, Sid Charisse.
She only danced with him in one movie.
Yes, in one movie.
And he wouldn't dance with her again because she was as good or
Juliet
actually,
Prowse?
No. She was as good or better
Leslie
than
Caron.
He was.
Leslie Caron?
No.
Leslie Caron. Okay, so that's our trivia question for next week. Call with an answer.
Yeah, but I won't be here.
Well, that's okay.
Win yourself a coffee mug.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
We love that, Larry.
Yeah, thanks, Larry.
Oh, we could have a new segment.
A few weeks ago when I was putting the final touches on McGrath in Paris, I watched and listened to the music from and watched a little bit of Le Parapluie de Cherbourg, The Umbrellas of Cherbourg.
I have no idea how to speak it.
That came out in, 1965, something like that. And it's all sung. It's like going to an opera and listening to nothing but arias. It's all sung in French. It's a marvelous poem.
I have a confession. My very favorite song in the entire world, and this is no kidding, is the theme from the 1953 movie Moulin Rouge.
Oh, wow.
Where is Your Heart?
Oh, my God.
I just heard it driving in here tonight, and it's Mantovani, and my God.
Yep.
There's something in that song that makes me remember, but I can't remember what it was.
Oh.
But it brings
That's
back
a wonderful
a memory.
Movie.
It's a great memory. I just wish I could remember what the memory was. That's what happens when you get Alzheimer's.
It's about the artist Toulouse-Lautrec.
Toulouse-Lautrec, that is exactly right.
Yeah.
It's, what a wonderful tune, though. And they had so many good renditions of it. But I think Mantovani's was the best because I love his cascading violins and stuff.
Yeah, he did a good job on that one.
Yeah, he did. Why don't you give our listeners your contact information, email address, whatever you
website,
got
website, all that good stuff.
Yep.
I don't have a web. I have, I'm on Facebook, Larry Booker.
Okay.
And my email address is lbooker425@hotmail.com.
That's easy to remember.
Yeah, and anybody interested in my book, they can send me an email, and I can get it from my publisher. It's also on Amazon. You can order it through Barnes & Noble.
I was just actually on Amazon today and found it there.
Me too, yep.
So, yeah.
And if you're into electronics, you can get it through Nook and Kindle.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
I still like to feel the paper between my thumb.
Me too.
I agree. And you are available for book talks and book signings. And
absolutely.
You would go to World War II museums. You would go to any kind of an institution that celebrated Irish history. And
definitely.
You go to Gaelic festivals. And there's all kinds of places if you're a listener.
And any book fair.
That's doing these kinds of things.
Right.
Contact.
Yep. So I've been to several bookstores around the area, but as you say, Jim, Vermont's not super populated.
Not a lot of folks.
Have you been to the North Shire? I don't know if that's really far from where you live, Manchester Center.
That's about 40 minutes south of here. I've talked to them, but nothing has developed.
Nothing's developed there. That's such a fabulous store.
It is. We went down there a year or so ago to see David Sanger. He writes for the New York Times. And he has a book called out, which came out a year or so ago, called The Inheritance. And we went down there, and he spoke, and he signed it.
Yeah, wow, signed the book. Good for
you. My sister was on staff there at one time. She was the head of
children's
the department, but that was, 20 years ago now. But we would go there regularly.
There's a bookstore in the town just north of us. St. Patrick's Day evening on March 17th.
Yes.
And I went up there and I read, and a couple of friends of mine, they play violin and guitar, and they sang Irish songs. So I would read, they would sing, I would read, they would sing.
Perfect.
That's a perfect, the combination of the written word and music is so perfect.
It is, it's important.
Yep. And I talked to the events coordinator, and I showed her the cover of McGrath in Paris, and we're going to do this again in April. It'll be April in Paris, this kind of thing.
Right. Very smart.
But then you're going to have read mandolin. Read mandolin.
Shot of whiskey.
All right, my friend.
Bazookies.
We're going to have to get off the radio. Thanks so much again for joining us.
I don't want to leave you guys.
I know. It's been a ball. We thank you again for joining us.
Hey, my pleasure entirely.
And this is what we tell all our writers. If you have something coming up and you want to give us a call on our radio nights, which are 7 o'clock on Thursdays, feel free.
Call in.
The number here is 818-602-4929. That's on our page, also on LA Talk Radio. So you can
I got that right here on Bobby's email.
There you go. And you can give us a call and tell us what's going on with you.
And you can post on our Facebook page all the time.
And you can post on our Facebook page.
Yeah, Heidi posted today about her book being available as an audio
I'm going to actually download it.
What do I get
the
for
Writer's Block Radio Show Facebook page.
Okay.
Yep. And we're there.
We posted about
tonight. Okay, hey, listen, great talking to you guys.
Great talking to you, Larry, and it's been a hoot having you on the show.
All right, well, thanks an awful lot, and have a great evening. Oh, you guys haven't even had supper yet.
No,
actually, we have.
We haven't. Jim and I, we'll be eating shortly.
So anyway, again, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Enjoy the rest
thanks
of your
calling.
Evening. Okay,
and
have a good one. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
Larry Booker.
That was so much fun.
It was. He was just dynamic.
Absolutely. I think we have to go home and have shepherd's pie now or something.
Something Irish.
I need a little Jack Daniels or something.
Lamb.
Jameson.
That's lamb, isn't it? Okay.
Well, we'll be thinking of you, Jim, when you're having your procedure on Monday. And we're going to tell you to keep writing and keep fighting.
Yeah, I will. And next week on your concert series, you have Eli Barcy.
Yep.
And I guess she's awesome, huh?
She's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, of course, Russ and Court will be here to speak with Mr. Casey Teffertiller, who is the author of The Definitive. Wyatt Earp, we called it the Bible today.
And yep.
He didn't argue with me, so I guess.
Very important work on Wyatt
Casey's Earp. Another one that's going to be a dynamo on the air. So we're going to have a good time, or Russ is going to have a good time with Casey.
Yep.
Other than that, I will be out next week, of course. As I said, I'm going to have a hip replacement. I'll be back the following Thursday. I don't know who's going to be on that night.
I'm sorry, I'm drawing a blank.
Me too. But
I'll start reading.
The book you tell me when I get home. Okay, thanks a lot for joining us, and we are out of here.